Welcome everyone to the Slowpoke's off-week podcast. I am here today with Slowpoke number two, David Chalani, and I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
We are here to do our fun new topic that I think everybody was kind of expecting from a podcast this week.
E3!
It's the three E's. It's the Electronic Electronics Electronics Show.
Wow, is that really?
Pretty sure is what that stands for. No, it's like the Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I was worried that if it was the Electronics Expo, that wouldn't... Anyway, that's fine.
It's the Lots of Electronics Expo.
You are absolutely right, though, David. We are here to talk about all the wonderful things that happened.
Yeah. Or at the very least, all of the things that we didn't find boring. obviously, the premise of our show is somewhat counter-hype in some ways, but we can still get our interest piqued by things, and so we're just going to be going through the big old list. Why? Do you want to just jump straight in? Is there really more preamble that we need to do?
No. I think that's how it is.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about E3, and we're going to go. And we're going to start with, I think, the first thing that caught both of our attention, and actually caught attention to me and other people... Mm. In my circle, was A Way Out.
Yeah. That was, I think it was part of the, both the EA and the Microsoft presentation, but this looks very, very cool. To anybody who's not familiar, this is, or doesn't, you know, recognize it from just the name, it's the game that requires split-screen co-op. So you need to play it with a friend. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the same room, but it is hugely encouraged. And even if you are playing online, the screen that you're looking at is still a split screen. So you've got your player on the left and the player on the right. There are some kind of interesting things that they're doing with that screen split.
Yeah, totally. It's like they're going to merge cutscenes together, and then they're also going to have one player might be going through a cutscene while one player is acting out the game and all this kind of stuff. So they'll move through that a little. That looks really cool.
It's made by the developers of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, and I'm very angry at myself because I didn't write down who that was, but they, if Brothers was the one where you had the single controller to control two independent characters and you had to go through and solve puzzles by like boosting the little brother up or like, you know, just like kind of working together as it was like a single player co-op game.
Yeah, see, it was by Starbreeze Studios, just to help you out there. but I think I heard a lot of people talk about Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons because they would share the controller with a partner or a friend. One person would take one joystick, one person take the other joystick, and they would play through the game like that.
See, that's kind of fun, but and I had considered that, but there's two reasons why I never did it. One is I'm single, and two is that I feel that it actually, like, for a game that is so interesting and so that is trying something very fun and kind of cool like that, I am very resistant to messing with it and pulling that away from sort of the artist intention. I know that sounds very wanky. Plenty of games, like, you know, we just played Until Dawn, for example, where we were passing controller back and forth, where I don't have the problem with doing the co-op where it's really a single player thing. But specifically this one, it just seemed like I'd be watering down something very cool.
No, I totally get that. I've played through some sort of games with someone else, like some sort of arts games or something that they're trying something. And you can tell when they're going a little... Not like super high concept, but when they're trying to do an idea, sometimes you just need to focus in and zone and...
Yeah. And I think that this particular game as well, I'd definitely be wanting to do that. Because the premise is that you're in a prison, right? So you've got the two characters, one's already in prison, the other one arrives, and then they have to escape. And it's got... When would you say that's set? Like early 70s, probably, it looks like to me?
Yeah, I can't tell. It could even be earlier, like...
I feel 70s is a good bet, but like people who are more culturally aware, please sound off in the comments, tell me how wrong I am, because I'm not great at epochs. But yeah, it's got like that old school feel, sort of out in, you know, the American plains-ish with forests and whatnot. I don't know what that kind of type of country is called in America.
No, yeah, I have no idea.
But maybe like one of the mountain states. Maybe. It's all like very national parkish kind of looking.
Yeah, moving on from our lack of knowledge of the American wilderness.
Yeah. The point is, it looks really cool. The atmosphere feels very, very interesting. And that core mechanic of like, you have to play co-op and you really ought to do it on a couch. I'm just so into that. They have pressed all the right buttons. I want to play that game so bad.
See, when I first heard about this game, people were calling it a prison break game.
Mm.
Right? And I'm like, oh, So this is a game based off the TV show Prison Break?
Oh, you thought like literally capital P, capital B, Prison Break, right?
Yeah, I thought it was a game about that TV show. And I was like, that sounds terrible. I do not want to play that. And then I saw it and it's everything you said it was. And it looks very interesting and very exciting.
Prison Break is a fun show. And I think they've just, haven't they just like done a new season of that this year? Or maybe...
Yeah, they're going to re-escape from the prison.
Oh, cool. So they're going back to their roots, I guess.
Yes.
So Prison Break is a cool show. Lots of people like it. But the tone in this is more like Alcatraz or more like the really famous one. What's the really famous one with Morgan Freeman?
Oh, that one.
Why? Ah, I'm so angry at myself.
What is Google going to tell me? You mean the Shawshank Redemption?
Yes, the Shawshank Redemption. Fuck. But yeah, that's the tone that I feel it's capturing much more than Prison Break.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Prison Break is almost like a similar tone to something like, you know, Arrow or something like that. You know, it's very kind of rounded and contemporary and very, very TV.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas this is a lot more, it feels so much more like a drama, and you get those little hints of like mob stuff in there. And at least one of the guys is clearly sort of that whole Mediterranean, Sicilian, Bronx sort of character, aesthetic, and ethnic background.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
I've seen his nose.
Yeah, I don't know what his name is, but you think it's going to be Vinny.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's Leo. It's Leo, I think, is that guy's name.
Yes.
But yeah, you mentioned the mechanic where they have like the one player might be in a play section and the other one might be in a cutscene. And I've heard some people complain about that like, you know, what's going to happen? Are you supposed to be trying to watch the cutscene and do a puzzle at the same time? I don't think it's going to be like that at all. From what I gathered, it's more just like a perspective control type thing. So one person might be locked off in the cutscene and they're seeing it like with the directorial camera and the cinematography with the cuts and the close-ups and whatever, whereas the other person might be further back from the scene and they can walk around and look at things from different angles. And it kind of reminded me of the first Assassin's Creed, where they had this thing where, you know, you would walk up to this historical event and you would just be there as Altair, and you could walk around and get a feel for the environment if you wanted. But every now and then you could pull one of the triggers or something like that, and it would give you like a proper close-up camera shot.
That's something that Metal Gear Solid games also used to do, where pull the trigger button, you would go through Snake's eyes.
Yeah, and so I think it's a little bit more like that. And the two examples we've given, especially I think the Assassin's Creed one, are very clunky and inelegant.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I think, is actually going to be a great way to have the best of both worlds, that you can have one person moving around and keeping the environment feeling very tangible and very lived in, and the moment feeling very alive and real. But on the other hand, you still have all of the dramatic and benefits of a locked off, uncontrolled cutscene. And it sort of allows both things to happen together.
No, I totally agree. I can see how you could totally mess this up, but it just depends on the execution of the studio. So
yeah, exactly.
As someone who sometimes gets distracted by text subtitles, you know, there's a part of me that is worried, but I think with that visuals medium, I think it's easier for people to pass between the two.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. And I think that there are going to be, because we have to remember, like, I've not played all of Brothers of Tale of Two Sons. I think for a while we were considering that being one of our games that we covered. But having played at least the first level or two of that, they know what they're doing with their gimmicks. Like, they're not shallow and they're not unthought out. Like, the mechanical stuff in Brothers of Tale of Two Sons, which sounded like it could have been a nightmare on paper, works really well, and they put a lot of effort into that. I think that I can trust, what'd you say it was, Starbreeze.
Yeah, I think you can tell by how well they did with that game that you basically only heard people say it was good, or that was it. It was like,
yeah, exactly.
That's all you heard was people who liked it, and you didn't really hear people complain.
Just little things. Like, one comment I think the extra credits guys might have made, was that because the Big Brother is on the left stick, and the left stick is what you use most comfortably, completely by passive, you know, control of familiarity, the Big Brother often turns out to be the one leading the way. Just little things like that show they really thought through what they were doing, and they really have an understanding of something and appreciate the nuance of what they're introducing, and it isn't just a cheap kind of staple on this cool mechanic to get a bunch of clicks.
Yeah, I could tell that because the developer who came on stage at the presentation felt like the only human being in the EA show conference that didn't have a microchip in them.
Yeah, admittedly, he was endearingly enthusiastic rather than like...
businessman robot.
Yeah, and there were points where he was talking about, he was like, come on, guys, I'm so excited, like, you won't even believe it. It's like, he seems like a child, and it's cringeworthy, but in a way that makes me want to give him a hug.
Yeah.
Not like makes me want to turn the stream off.
Yes, definitely. But I'm really excited to see what happens and how that game goes and play it when it comes out. The only thing is, I have to find out who I'm going to play it through the first time.
Yeah, I mean, God, if only... Yeah, I was having that same problem, because like, if there was a person that I had like a really strong like gaming based partnership with or something like that, it would be pretty easy. It'd be like a non-choice, but like not having that avenue in my life, it's just like, who,
in all honesty,
who could possibly fill that role?
I might play this with a random person on the internet, so I don't have to choose among the thousands that are available to me, because the last thing I wouldn't want to do is hurt anyone's feelings. Otherwise, that'll just lie to everyone and tell them they're all my first time.
Yeah, that's a pretty teenage approach to it, I suppose. Anyway, but no, like, whoever, obviously we're dancing around the topic here. John, would you like to play A Way Out together?
I have to think about it, David. I'll get back to you.
Okay. Well, yeah, for sure. Like, whatever you choose, I'm fine. I'm a mature adult man. But yeah, whoever I do end up playing that with, that's going to be fucking sick. And like, so good. Anyway, we are probably spending a little bit too much time talking about A Way Out.
Nah, it's fine. It was what we were excited about, but I think we should move on.
Definitely number one. So we're probably just going to start charging through the list now so that we don't chew up too much of our listeners' precious time. One thing I definitely want to mention was the Devolver Digital conference. If anybody has seen it, they know why. Very funny, very self-aware, very Adult Swim. Check it out. It's 30 minutes.
Oh, if that. I think it's even shorter.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's 20. I can't remember. But yeah, very funny. A couple of the jokes do go on a bit long, but, you know, like I said, very Adult Swim in it.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's by a group called Imagos Films. And they and I had a fun little interaction on Twitter, which was nice after I shared the video around. But yeah, lots of fun. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out.
Also, one of the games that they demonstrated did look interesting, although it wasn't an E3 release. So
yeah, nothing they talked about was new for E3. I think the tweet that started that whole interaction was that I made was something along the lines of, even when Devolver Digital has nothing to say, they're never boring.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't really anything new, but
no, it was still fun. So it was nice for them to put it out.
Yeah, exactly. Probably the thing that a lot of people want to talk about, though, would be the Scorpio, or as it's now known, the Xbox One X.
I think we should shorten that to just Xbox.
Yeah, XBOX. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a logical acronym.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of people obviously have been talking about that. And of course, every time somebody releases a new Xbox, everybody starts making jokes about Xbox boxes and one Xbox One box and shit. And so I'm already sick of that.
God, man. But I do really want to meet the guy who gets to name all their consoles. And his job security must be really good.
Yeah, I mean, because this is an anecdote, but a friend of mine was saying that when they named the Xbox One, they were hoping that everybody would call it The One, a la Neo, but everybody started calling it the X-Bone, and they were like, no, and I think this Xbox One X...
Why would anyone call it The One? That's no.
Yeah, exactly. It's because it was supposed to be like the one-stop media station thing for your whole TV setup.
That sounds...
Because you could watch Netflix to it through it and shit like that.
That sounds like something a marketer would love that real people would hate.
Exactly. There's not too much to say about the Xbox One X. It looks fine. I'm sure that there are some people out there who are happy to spend $500 on something that can do 4K.
650 Australian.
Oh, 650 Australian, is it? Yeah, it's 500 US. But what's probably worth mentioning is that I think if you're going to drop like whatever it is, like $3,000 on a 4K TV, you probably are going to invest in a gaming PC for that anyway. Like,
yeah.
I think that there is, this market might be smaller than people think. Regardless, the price tag is not that unreasonable for what it is. I mean, it's comparable with the Switch that can't do any of that stuff, but the Switch is portable and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I don't blame people, you know, for wanting it, because there's also the fact that, like, even with the PS Pro, it raises the consistency of the games you play.
Yeah, so it does super sampling and stuff like that. So there is some upscaling elements to it. If nothing else, it's probably going to give you a more stable frame rate.
Yeah.
The arguments for and against this are sort of bigger than the console itself. It's more about, like, the whole intergenerational fragmentation, because, like, the whole point for me of a console is the reliability, that I can buy one thing and know that when I plug a game in, it will play, and that there won't be a need for me to finagle with, like, drivers and shit like that, that everything just works.
Well, admittedly, both Microsoft and Sony have made demands, I'd call them, to developers to make sure there's parity across all of their devices.
Yeah, and that's important, but, you know, we don't know what this shit's going to look like in 3 years.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so just, like, on the console itself, it does 4K. The only thing that they confirmed a frame rate for was Forza. Everything else they conveniently didn't mention. And this sort of, again, comes back to my, I'm just going to say it, PC elitism, basically.
Yeah.
I can play 4 games at, like, 120 frames, you know? And so, like, when I see things like this where they're dancing around the frame rate, I'm just like, I'd rather just buy an Xbox One secondhand for, like, $150. You know, like,
A, you'd be hard pressed to find even an Xbox One at that price.
Mm.
I tried to find Wii U's on the cheap, and that was surprisingly hard.
Yeah, good point. And so, like, the specific dollar amount isn't the point, though. The point is, it's significantly cheaper than a brand new Scorpio.
I think that it's, you got to think of it as, like, jumping off points. Mm. Like, how much, where is each sort of price point at? Mm. And I do look at that and go, the 650, and go, that seems a bit high. That seems a bit, once it goes over $500, you're starting to be in the,
yeah, exactly,
really pricey area. I mean, you know, I grabbed the PS4 Slim, $300. I got PlayStation Plus.
Yep.
And I've just been getting the games for gold, basically.
Yeah, and
that's worked for me.
And so this is the question, right? Oh, sorry, the consideration for me. Right now, after this E3, my motivation to get a PS4 is much higher than it was before it. I say much higher, it is higher.
Yep.
Despite the fact that the Xbox conference was talking about, you know, a whole bunch of new games, a whole bunch of exclusives, all that kind of thing, none of them really made me go, definitely going to buy an Xbox, you know?
I mean, what exclusives did they name?
Well, a lot of them were like, it's hard for me to keep them all straight in my head, because there's console exclusives and times exclusives, and then there's exclusives for Xbox and Windows 10, which for someone in my position is not an exclusive at all.
This was kind of my point.
It's hard for me to pull them all out one by one, but, like, I would remember if any of the games that I was excited for were exclusives, and they weren't. So, whereas some of the stuff for the Sony stuff was a little bit more interesting. We'll move on to that, though. All I really want to say about the Scorpio, though, is they started off with this presentation, and again, this is the cynic in me, but it is kind of peak E3 when a piece of hardware is announced, because you have this room full of people who are supposed to be, like, you know, professional journalists and shit. And someone will come out and they'll talk about flops, and they'll talk about, you know, vapor chambers, and they'll talk about, like, power solutions and all this kind of thing that nobody knows what they're talking about, because none of the people in the audience are engineers, right?
Well, I mean, and yeah.
Then you get these huge cheers about, like, whoa, it's got full backwards compatibility with your Xbox One accessories. And then the whole room cheers. And it's like, how is that cheerworthy? That is clearly a baseline.
Yeah.
The Xbox One will plug into your TV. Woo! What?
I have to be honest.
Of course it will work with previous controllers and stuff. That's ridiculous that it wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in that talk room. I imagine there must be some sort of gas that they pump in,
yeah,
or it's just the massive people. Like, when you put hundreds of people in a room, you can't help but be like, yeah, woo, let's get excited.
Yeah. I remember leaving the Clone Wars feeling excited because I saw it in a VMAX theater.
I can't blame people for getting hyped when they're in a room full of very big screens and expensive sounds, but it does feel a bit weird.
And it looks cool as shit. It does look cool as shit. I get it.
I agree with you, though. It's like, yeah, but it's just like a faster box. Like, why do we care? Like, what's...
Yeah. I don't want to dismiss it out of hand. I think that, like you said, there are people who want it and it'll be useful for some people. And, like, if for no other reason, like the PlayStation one, the PlayStation Pro, I would consider getting the Pro because that's going to be the difference between 60 and 30 frames in 1080 on some games, yeah. Right? And those frames matter to me a lot more than the resolution. But, yeah, it's just, like I said, when you're seeing a bunch of people in a room cheering at stuff they clearly don't understand or things that are clearly non-announcements, it does kind of make me sit back, being a person removed from that in my own home, kind of going like, calm down a little bit, like, Jesus.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why they have big conferences, I guess.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the games, though. So, a game that caused a bit of a stir on Twitter was The Last Knight.
Yep.
So, that looks cool.
Yep.
But the reason, it looks very cool, very aesthetically interesting and musically interesting.
Yeah, it looks super beautiful. And I remember looking at trailers after the fact and being like, oh, this looks like a very interesting 8-bit kind of side-scrolly adventure kind of game.
They do the cool thing where it's like 8-bit graphics and resolution, but it's still kind of like 3D modeled and there's still this real interesting sort of like parallax depth to it. So it looks very, very cool.
They layer it really well.
Mm. Problem is that the lead developer on the project, whose name I want to say is Tim Sorensen or Tim Soren? Oh, Saray. Tim Saray.
Yep.
Has a very vocal past of supporting Gamergate. And lots of people were upset by that. I am definitely one of them because I read through some of the stuff that he'd said and some of the stuff that he kind of pointed to as evidence of his non-bigotry just kind of concreting that classic.
Sorry, can we just stop? Like, I don't know if you provide evidence of non-bigotry. I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, it's like to the teapot in space thing. Yeah,
it's like, sure, I did shoot all those people, but like, look at all these days I didn't shoot people.
Well, he pointed to, like, so he's said, like, a lot of, and it's, like I said, it's a lot of the classic stuff. People have characterized it as damage via ignorance rather than damage via malice. But at some point, I kind of fall into Movie Bob's camp on this, and it's like, it doesn't really matter why you're hurting people. If you're hurting people, it's still really shitty.
Yeah.
And without wanting to go into, like, every single thing that he said, like, the publisher came out with a comment after all of this broke, and it was the most pathetically lukewarm, underwhelming, gutless statement that you could read in response to something like this. It's like, oh, this isn't the Tim that we know, and...
Yeah, they copied it out of the Word doc for apologizing for employees.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's complete dismissal. It's like, oh, don't worry, it's not an issue. He's a cool guy, we like him, and he's nice to work with.
Probably could have just said, we're sorry for any pain we caused. And moved on.
Exactly. Like at least acknowledge it. At least, and like they pointed to a comment that he'd made on like some other site where he's like, you know, he's responded to these things himself a year ago. We think that if people read his comment about it, they'll feel better. And like I said, again, the exact kind of like self-justifying bullshit that anybody says. They're all like, oh, you know, I believe in freedom of speech, but Anita Sarkeesian is toxic.
Yeah.
And it's just like all of that classic hypocritical crap.
Yeah, I think it's just disappointing because the game looked really interesting and now I feel uncomfortable about buying it.
Exactly, and that's the thing, right? Like, now I feel gross and I don't want to buy it because it's also about how, like, welfare ruined the world and shit. And, like, that concept I might have been open to exploring if there clearly wasn't all of this other, like, Gamergate-ish kind of bullshit behind it as well. Like, it's very, very libertarian in the way that it's explained and so just turned off it.
Isn't it only an Xbox One game anyway?
Yeah, I think that's 10, an Xbox One exclusive.
Yeah, I was like, great, I'll never have to play it anyway because I don't have any of those things.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
It's like I said, it's gross. Now I'm just kind of don't want to touch it. You want to talk about Life is Strange?
Of course I want to talk about Life is Strange. I always want to talk about Life is Strange.
Yeah, we both love Life is Strange. I think it was our second episode, and to this day, it's still one of my favorite ones because we were both very impassioned about playing it and talking about what happened in that. Really, really cool prequel. It's all about Chloe and Rachel Amber, a shorter 3-episode structure. Won't have time travel because I don't think that would make any sense whatsoever. But let's be honest, the time travel was a great way to get in the door, but not really why I stuck with that game.
Well, yeah, I thought the time travel was interesting. I am a little bit sort of like, okay, what's the hook? Is it just story? That's fine.
Mm.
But like, I really enjoyed all that time travel stuff. And if it wasn't there, it might have, you know, affected how much I enjoyed the whole experience.
Yeah, I mean, because Life is Strange is basically popular because it's a girl-focused Donnie Darko.
That's true.
Which automatically makes it a much better Donnie Darko. But yeah, I do understand why, because of that, you feel that the time travel loss is a pretty big hit. One other thing that's probably worth mentioning that is very disappointing is that because Ashley Birch, who is the voice of Chloe, and also the voice of, I think, Ellie in The Last of Us, she is involved in a SAG strike that's been going on for the better part of a year. I think it's like around 200 days now. And so she will not be participating in the game, which I think is very, very sad. She's come out and said that she is disappointed that she can't take part in it. But I also massively admire what it is that she's doing at the moment and feel that if there is rage and disappointment directed at anybody, it should probably be at the industry for requiring this kind of strike. Birch is doing the right thing. I'm sad that I won't get to hear her voice, but all power to her.
Don't you mean the companies in the industry that are forcing the strike?
Oh, that's sort of what I meant by that.
To be more specific.
Yeah, I think that we treat a lot of voice actors much worse than we should. And I say we. We is a culture, but like the industry does not appreciate voice actors as much as it should. I think that the strike is completely reasonable, and it is sad that this is a consequence of that. But if anybody else is sad or angry or disappointed about it, write to the people who are responsible. Don't blame the actor for taking the right steps and showing solidarity with the other people that she works with.
Yeah, I know. I agree with that.
All right. Let's just power forward, I think. Anthem is something else that was interesting. BioWare's doing a Destiny alike. Don't know how much I care about that.
Yeah, it looks too beautiful to exist. I looked at it and I was like, this game's so gorgeous. I do not understand how it's going to be at all. Or
yeah.
And also, it has all of those really Destiny-style loot kind of mechanics in it. So, I don't know how I feel about that.
Look, people are into that. I've never really been into, I'm tired, I'm going to come home and do a grind. I mean, like, I get why that's appealing. It is starting to feel a little bit saturated to me with this genre of, like, explore a big, destroyed world where nature's reclaimed everything. Like, you've got, Horizon Zero Dawns, everything in that kind of genre. And, you know, Destiny, I think, does also fall into that camp a little bit. It looks fine. I hope people enjoy it. I probably won't pick it up.
Yeah, sounds fair.
Ubisoft announced Mario and Rabbids.
Now this I went from watching it and going, this looks like the worst thing I've ever seen, to being absolutely in love with it in the space of that intro, like that trailer they showed. I do not know how I could like the Rabbids in any capacity.
Yeah.
But when they showed that game and it turns out to be like this weird Mario crossover Rabbids XCOM style turn-based strategy game for the Switch, I was like interested.
Yeah, see, I my brother asked me if I'd be into it because he knows I like XCOM, and I said to him that, like, honestly, the fact that there are guns and you shoot aliens and it has that whole like aesthetic is what keeps me interested in XCOM. I'm not super into like Fire Emblem or, you know, any of those other games in that same genre. Like, they're fine, like, but they just don't hold my interest long term. So, I mean, it's on the Switch and I kind of do need games for that thing because I really am only playing two things at the moment. So maybe we'll see, but like, yeah, again, it's not causing me to rush out the door and pre-order anything.
The way I think of it is it's just like another little notch on the, maybe I could buy a Switch.
Yeah.
That's still well within the... No, not yet, but...
Yeah, and you're echoing my exact thoughts about the PlayStation at the moment as well. Something else that Ubisoft announced was Beyond Good and Evil 2, which is really kind of interesting. Neither of us have played Beyond Good and Evil 1, but really feel like we fucking should. And apparently this is a massive tonal shift as well. So I definitely want to play the first one before this prequel comes out.
Yeah,
because I don't want the later thing to color the first thing.
No, that's true. I'm really interested to see why people care. Like, just because from the outside, you never really see very much of the original game. Yeah, it would just be interesting to know what all the excitement and all the interest is about. Because this has been going on for years. People have been wanting to see this game. It almost was ready to be a bloody Half-Life 3, Duke Nukem 15-year release game thing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been a lot of talk about it. I feel like those two topics back-to-back, actually, Mario and Rabbids and Beyond Good and Evil 2. I feel like we should probably mention Laura Dale, who is someone we're both a fan of.
Yeah.
She has been working very hard on reporting around Mario and Rabbids for, you know, more than 6 months. And a lot of people have been giving her a lot of shit about that. It doesn't take a lot of effort to think about why, but now that both of these things have been released, she's been vindicated in a lot of ways, which is very, very satisfying to see. And I think that, you know, it's just kind of nice to give her props for that. High five, well done, you killed it. Fuck the haters.
I don't know why anyone, like, doubts her. She's, like, the most reasonable person ever. And always, she's always like, this is a rumor. This is speculation.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what I heard. She's never like, this is verboten.
And, like, I'm not massively into, like, games journalism, but as far as games, like, journalists go, as opposed to people who call themselves games journalists but ultimately are just extensions of PR for companies, that, like I feel that there are a few real journalists that I actually pay attention to more than Laura Dale. So she does a good job, and you're not wrong that, like, there isn't this finality to the things that she's saying. She's just providing us with information, like her fucking job is. Like, that's a hero. You know what I mean? Somebody who helps you know things is a hero.
Yeah, she does a great job of it. I don't know. It's just, people are just hating her for the obviously terrible reasons that they do.
Yeah, and that's sad. Let's move on before I get too angry. Transference was something that piqued your interest. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Transference is like, from what I saw, it's some sort of weird VR horror experience kind of thing. The only reason it piqued my interest is because it had Frodo Baggins in it.
Yeah, so Elijah Wood is somebody who's done a lot of interesting things since his career was destroyed by appearing in Lord of the Rings.
That man, that his career was not destroyed by Lord of the Rings. He has carried on to greater and greater heights.
Yeah.
I always see him in things, and he always puts in 110%. So,
and there's another parallel with Daniel Radcliffe here as well. There are a couple of different ways you can go after getting, like, Luke Skywalker levels of exposure.
Yeah.
And one of them is to give up, basically. And then the other is to start just going crazy hard on indie projects because that's what you have the time to do. And so, like, this seems like one of those things. I only watched one trailer about it. From what I understand, the premise is that Ubisoft is, like, well, maybe not Ubisoft specifically, but, like, when you as a player put on your VR headset, you are a character in the game. It's sort of like it's blurring those boundaries. By putting on the headset, you're entering this experiment that's being run about, you know, digitizing trauma and shit like that.
Yeah.
So
looks super creepy.
Yeah, and it does a lot more to pique my interest than any of the other horror stuff we saw this year. The only thing is that it clearly requires a VR headset. Mm. Hopefully, we're talking more like Google Cardboard end than we are HTC Vive end, but
to step aside a bit into the realm of tech nerdery, overt tech nerdery, you can always hack, if anything comes out on a Steam, like a Steam VR, you can always hack it to appear on like a Google Cardboard or a
So I'm going to mention a couple of things. One, always is probably not the accurate word to use in that situation.
That's very, very fair.
It's very easy for you and I to say stuff like that when we are very, you did qualify this, but like, you know, I run Linux systems. We've built our own PCs. You've got your whole range of tech shit that I barely understand. We're a lot more positioned to be able to do that. The average person, the average Elijah Wood fan, I don't think is gonna be able to work around the $1,000 price tag for this game.
And I mean, also, there's like, not only is the fact that if it comes out on one of the high-end VR systems, that's like $1,000, and then you need $1,000 plus PC to play it, that limits its audience. But I'm not sure if my eyes are VR compatible.
Yeah, I would definitely need to at least get contacts because the issues with my sight, though minor, they're asymmetrical, so they don't work well for VR.
Yeah, my issues with my eyes involve like diagonal directional movement and it's very strange and I don't know how to get around it.
The VR I've tried has not worked well for me.
I honestly might just have to skip VR unless they can do some really clever things with that eye screen.
Yeah, or why don't one of these, you know, $1,000 fucking headsets allow me to focus the lenses independently of one another?
Look, again,
how about that?
There's probably
that would help a lot of people.
There's probably a techier group of people further down the line than us who are like, well, there's always a way to fix that.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. All right, charging ahead, Wolfenstein 2. I am happy to have an opportunity to shoot Nazis.
Is that in general or for this game?
We'll say for the game, at least for the game. Let's put it like that.
Let's move on. Okay, I'm really excited.
Doom is good. Wolfenstein's probably good too.
I was a really big fan of the original... No.
The most recent Wolfenstein.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way to phrase it. There have been many remakes of Wolfenstein. I think the Enemy Territory remake was very big in the 90s aughts modding scene.
Mm.
But the recent Wolfenstein remake, I was a really great fan of. It had some very well, like, for a Wolfenstein game, it had well-written characters.
Mm.
And it dealt with sex in a actually decent way.
Okay.
For a video game.
Yeah, well then maybe I should fucking play that, hey?
Yeah, maybe we should put that on the list. But I'm very excited to see it again, because it's just, it knows what it's doing, but I feel like whoever writes that game is just always on point.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is... yeah, like I said, I haven't played it, so the most recent one, so I can't really comment on it. But, like, you know, what I see is interesting enough, and yeah, so maybe we'll give that a go. What about the Sony conference? So I was saying before that, like, Sony's checked a lot of boxes that nudge me towards the PS4.
Yep.
So we've got a Shadow of the Colossus remaster and a new Spider-Man game, both of which hit good nostalgia points for me. I've not played the original Shadow of the Colossus, but I've always wanted to, because it's such a huge artistic landmark. Everybody who's played Spider-Man wants them to figure out how to remake Spider-Man good again, but they've never really been able to quite get there.
I was such a fan of the early PS2 Spider-Mans. Like, for all their faults, I still really enjoyed them.
Mm. And most people did. It's like a Banjo-Kazooie level of nostalgia.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm actually surprised by how interested I am to see it sort of pop back up.
Mm. And Spider-Man, it's the exact right time too, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the exact right time.
It's getting relaunched with a movie that it looks like people are going to like. Mm. So, yeah.
You also have a note about Detroit by David Cage here. Ugh. Now, I did not actually know that this was a thing until I read it on this list right now.
Yes! Oh, I'm excited for this because I love the work of David Cage. Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls, massive fan. Even though it almost like it, none of his games never land 100%. I like what he's trying to do, and Detroit feels like a really big step in that direction of sort of perfecting the idea that he's had for many years.
Okay.
It was based off a 2012 PS3 tech demo called Kara. That floated around the internet. It's about an android that gets constructed and becomes sentient.
Oh, okay. I like AI.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole game is about androids and how they exist in the world and artificial consciousness and AI and stuff like that.
Mm. It's probably a good time for that as well, since there's a new Blade Runner coming out soon,
yes,
right?
So I think it's very interesting looking game. And the more I see about it, the more excited I get. Even if it's just going to be a regular David Cage game where it's a bit weird, I'll still love it. But if it can break the mold, the cage, as it were, I would be very enthusiastic about playing that and having a talk.
We also have the Nintendo conference. We saw some new stuff for Mario Odyssey. The main thing is that...
David.
What?
Though, David, what is that game?
Do you not know?
I get it, right? There's Mario and there's like places he goes.
Yeah.
And he has a hat and that's it. Please.
And the hat, if you throw the hat at a thing, you become the thing that you throw the hat at. So the big news is that you could be a frog or a T-Rex or some random dude. And a lot of people have been talking about the ethics of that. But
David.
Looks like fun.
What is this game? It's... I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it... Like I was saying before, it's another thing I can put on my Switch. Like, I'm kind of desperate for other cartridges I can chuck in there, and that looks like a good one, because Skyrim doesn't give me any kind of interest at all.
Well, you're not interested in another version of Skyrim, along with the other, what is it, 7, 8?
Yeah, I think there's some ridiculous amount of Skyrims now. An ongoing joke is that this year's E3 was just one long play of the Dovahkiin piece of music just underneath every conference.
Yep.
We've got Skyrim VR and Skyrim on the Switch. I don't care. there are too many. and I could barely keep track of them, which is why we at the Slowpokes have put together a handy Skyrim's version tracker.
Yep.
If you want to check that out, you can head to our website. There'll be a link there. That was a joke I'm way too proud of and put way too much effort in.
I love it. I got this message at 2 a.m. that was like, after we'd talked for ages and we'd talked about how it was almost impossible and all this work that had to be done, I get a message from David at 2 a.m. being like, I did it. It's live.
Yeah, I couldn't stop thinking about how to implement it, and then it just became a puzzle I had to solve. Back to like the actual E3 stuff that's genuinely interesting. So Mario Odyssey seems fun. Arms, you are kind of interested in Arms, right?
I don't know what it is about Arms, but it looks really fun.
Yeah.
Like, I just look at it and I get excited, and I also kind of want an exercise kind of thing with my arms anyway. Mm. So I'm like, I could actually, if I'm punching the air, that's kind of like playing like an exercise game, so.
Yeah, I played the beta when that came out recently. I tried to record that, but the audio was shot, and so I couldn't really release it, although I guess I could just dub over it. Messages if you want to see that. My feelings on Arms is that it looks fun. It was great to play for that half an hour, but the controls are just not quite tight enough. Things are very fiddly, and there's a lot of wasted energy. Like, you're using a lot of energy, and that's fun, but I also feel like I'm wasting so much energy because of how the punches need to be triggered and stuff. So I can't really say anything against it other than it didn't feel great when I played it. But again, for me personally, I've had the fun I need to with that game.
Okay.
We've got a bunch of list of stuff here, but we're precious on time, so I reckon we just punch through it. I'll read through, you'd say yay or nay.
Yep.
Battlefront 2.
Oh, Star Wars, that's episode 1. Yay. That makes me excited and probably nobody else.
Yeah, I don't mind the idea of a single-player campaign mode in that. Seems like it should be fun.
Yep.
The Metro Exodus.
Yes. Okay, so if they can manage to combine the Metro franchise with the Stalker series of games into some sort of open-world Russian apocalypse, I will be very interested in that.
Metro is something I've always wanted to be excited by, but never been able to click into. It might be a good addition to the list for the show. Mm-hmm. Starlink Battle for Atlas. So this is the like adult-targeted Skylanders thing where you build a ship and then scan it into the game.
Interesting. Interesting idea. I think they messed up the execution for me personally.
Yeah, I heard about it before I saw the announcement. It sounded very interesting when I heard about it. When I saw it, I was like, oh, that looks like cheap die-cast plastic, and the gameplay doesn't look that fun.
Yeah, I think the Star Wars X-Wing miniatures game has better models than that. And like, that's my benchmark for models.
The Star Wars X-Wing miniatures game is also just a very good game.
That's true.
New Kirby and new Yoshi were announced.
They look adorable.
Yep. They look cute. I can't really say much more than that. Once again, don't mind the idea of more shit for my Switch. Metroid Prime 4.
Wasn't it?
I'm definitely excited for that.
Didn't they literally just put up a splash screen?
Yeah, that's true. There wasn't that much to actually be shown.
Feels like mind control stuff. Like, Metro Prime 4.
The idea of a shooter on my Switch. Hell yeah.
Okay.
That's all I need to hear. Shooter on the Switch, and I'm gunning for it. And in that same vein, Pokemon is there's been an announcement, again, very, very few details, but there's going to be part of the core Pokemon franchise on the Switch. Definitely interested for that. Like,
yeah, why not? There should be a Pokemon for Switch.
If anything, this announcement made me feel relief because apparently there was doubt about it.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of presumed that that was a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
But the amount of people who were saying like, oh, wow, this is great. This is great news. This is surprising. I was like, oh, wow, I guess I really needed to consider my Switch purchase a little bit more before I got it.
So going back into the idea that Nintendo, I don't know how well they market their products sometimes. Mm. It's like not clear what's going to come to the Switch and what's going to go to the DS. And because they're still continuing the line with the release of the new 2DS, or whatever. Who knows what's going where?
That's a good point. And like a lot of people are a little bit fuzzy about that, but maybe we'll see a little bit more clarification once the Switch actually gets to the date that it should have been released on.
I just
and they actually have like proper online and shit.
I just wish game companies would just put a list on their website, like a text file or just a table that was like game console done.
Yeah. Nintendo is, of all the companies, I think the most notoriously tight-lipped. And I don't want to go into too much why I know this, but there is a great deal of deference and a very, very strong hierarchical structure in how Nintendo is based. And I think that affects how well this communication can be made. But you're not wrong. It's very frustrating from our end. And it's why shit like the Mario stuff, the Mario and Rabbit stuff getting leaked, I think is good for consumers.
Yeah.
So there's all of that to be said. That pretty much wraps up our E3 conversation.
We did it
over time, but I think in a manageable way.
We did it E3. We ran the race. We're
yay!
At the end.
As always, we're always looking for contribution and feedback and conversation with our adoring fans. So if there's anything that we missed and you do want to hear us like talk about that, hit us up on Facebook or on Twitter, and we can have that conversation a little
anywhere.
Bit more directly.
Write us essays on via email. Just go for it.
So our Twitter is @SlowpokesCast. That's been me. And E3 was a lot of fun. I got a lot more activity out of that than I normally would. Our Facebook is facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast.
Yep.
That's where you can hit up John.
Yep.
But obviously both of us will see either. Mm-hmm. Our website, slowpokespodcast.com, is where we have absolutely everything else. And our flagship product is our podcast, which is our gaming podcast.
Yep.
Which is next episode is what, 2 weeks from the release of this one?
Yes. So
and that is going to be Until Dawn.
Yeah. So you'll hear from us, you know, in a week. We might talk about something else. And you can also see our Let's Plays of
hell yeah,
Until Dawn go up. So we've already put up a couple episodes of that, and go and check
it
out.
Yeah, it's a full-length play. Some people have had some positive reactions to that, which is really great because I felt very self-conscious putting it up.
Yeah.
There are some... It is experimental at this point. It's kind of informing how our Let's Play format will work in the future, but we say funny things every now and then.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you want to hear John and I go a little bit more off the cuff, that's our YouTube page, which doesn't have a URL as of yet, but you can get there from our website.
It will soon. It will.
It will, once we have 100 subscribers.
Yeah.
All right. Other than that, John, thank you, as always, for joining me and our audience to have a fun podcast chat.
David, anytime I can talk to you in my dressing gown is a pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. And we'll see you next week for our another off week show, and the week after that for our Until Dawn show.
Yep. That's how it works. See you around.